every day, whether we're living in or walking through cities and towns, we are all susceptible to various chemicals and pollutants. However, for the animals that inhabit our urban environments, like birds, the situation is dire. Research conducted by scientists at the Macquarie University School of Sciences department found that sparrows are becoming frail, anxious, and are experiencing aging as a result of urban pollution, which is exposing these birds to lead contamination. RazorZ reporter Thomas Kutis speaks to one of the researchers behind this project, Professor Simon Griffith, who is a professor of avian behavioral ecology at Macquarie University, to find out more.
What drew you to study sparrows as indicators of urban pollution, and what makes them uniquely revealing?
Yeah, so I've done a lot of work on birds across Australia, particularly regional Australia, and sparrows are, they're particularly revealing because they are very intimately associated with people all around the world. So they're actually called the house sparrow, and that is because they live in and around people's houses. So by they nest under the eaves of people's houses, and that's kind of their preferred nesting place. And then they spend most of their life in people's backyards or front yards, getting food from around people's houses and cafes where people are kind of hanging out and spilling food. So of all birds, they're probably the most intimately associated with people, and therefore they're a really good indicator of the kind of harms that can be caused to us by things that are in our urban environment.
So how did you measure frailty, anxiety, and premature aging in these birds? What findings surprised you the most when doing this research?
Yeah. There were three different studies, so we took three different approaches to look at those three things that you mentioned. So the background is that we have been studying for a number of years sparrows in a number of different towns or cities where there's a contamination problem. And to measure that contamination in the environment, we actually directly measured the amount of contaminant in the blood of the sparrows. So we took a small blood sample, and then we could measure the amount of fluoride or the amount of lead that was actually in the blood of those birds. So that's the kind of background, the context, which means that for the individual birds that we were studying, we were able to say, this is how much contamination that they had been affected by. And then our question in those studies was, you know, does it really matter if a bird has a particular level of lead in its blood? So how does that lead affect its behavior or its aging, or the structure of its bones in the case of fluoride?
And could you tell us what towns in particular were concerning while doing this research?
Yeah, so with the towns where we did the work on lead pollution, that's Broken Hill in New South Wales, which is a lead and silver mining town, and has been for over a century. And then with respect to fluoride, we looked at that in a couple of towns, Portland in Victoria and Georgetown in Tasmania. And in both those cases, they have an aluminium smelter facility, and fluoride is emitted from that facility and again contaminates that that broader environment. So again, looking at different contaminations or different contaminants in those different contexts. And then to measure the effects on the sparrows, so with respect to the anxiety, we used a what we know about sparrows is because they've been living alongside humans for thousands of years, it's estimated they've had that very close association with people for about 10,000 years. So they're very attuned to, you know, whether people mean them harm or not. And so if someone pays attention to a sparrow, they will actually become anxious because they'll think, you know, if someone's looking at them, there's a good chance that someone's going to throw a stone at them or try and catch them in a net. Or do them some harm in some way. Whereas if you don't look at them, they'll actually just be kind of, you know, feeding at your feet or in your garden. And so we could test the anxiety level of sparrows by essentially an experiment where we had pictures of a man who was either facing directly towards the sparrows or facing sideways. And it was the same, basically it was a picture of the man presented in that different way. And we then saw how wary the birds were of approaching a feeding station that would set up to run that experiment. And what we found is that the birds indeed are very sensitive to being looked at, but they were only sensitive in the parts of town where they were contaminated with lead.
So do you see parallels between the effects of pollution on sparrows and potential consequences for human populations who are living in similar conditions?
Yeah, so absolutely. So what, the second part of the study on aging, which again we also did on sparrows, in this study we actually looked at the we could measure the effects of aging by looking at the telomeres in the blood. And the telomeres are essentially a little, it's a section of DNA which is a cap on the chromosomes, which is kind of how the DNA is stored inside each and every cell. And it's long been shown in many, many different animals, but also in humans, that the telomere length reduces as you age. And so animals or individuals that have shorter telomere lengths are more likely to die earlier in life. And so that's a finding. Telomere length shortening affects longevity or lifespan across all animals, including humans. And a previous study on humans in overseas has also shown that lead poisoned humans also have shorter telomeres. So it's effect of kind of the lead is basically kind of wearing out their cells and these little telomeres at a faster rate. So the fact that the sparrows in this town are also having those effects of the lead on their telomeres, we really should be expecting to see a similar effect in humans that also would be suffering from high levels of lead in their blood.
There's a lot of construction that happens in our towns, suburbs and cities, and even other industrial activities. Do you think that could be a contributing factor as to why there's a lot of lead contamination in humans and animals?
Yeah, the main sources of lead contamination in the environment are, so clearly in towns where there's either mining activity or there's smelting of lead or other industrial processes such as the recycling of batteries, those are contexts in which we find particularly heavy levels of lead. There is also some historical contamination. There's still lead present in the environment that came from the lead that was added to petrol, but that's been banned for several decades now. So there is still a certain amount of lead in the environment, because once it gets into the environment, it's remarkably resistant to, and it will stay in the soil. So in particularly in these towns where you've got these industrial processes which are generating particularly fine scale dust, that's where we really need to be looking. That's where we get likely to have the problems. So it's something. And then these problems, of course, can be dealt with either at source, so we can reduce the extent to which lead dust is getting into the environment from any of those processes. But we can also look at rehabilitating those environments to try and reduce the amount of that lead dust that's available.
With the finds that you've discussed, did you come across any ethical challenges in studying stress and aging within these birds, and how did you navigate them?
The studies that we've done with respect to the ethics, so most of these studies are focused on animals that were captured. We just did blood sampling, and then the birds were released. They were all tagged as well with an individually numbered band, so we could track them throughout their lifetime in these contexts. So as far as possible, we reduced, the sampling was relatively uninvasive. It was just a simple blood sample that we were able to take. And most of those animals are still out there and living in the environment. The study of fluoride was slightly different. So fluoride, one of the main effects of fluoride poisoning is the way in which fluoride affects the structure of bones. And so for that study, we actually had to sample some birds and examine their bones. So those individuals were destructively sampled, and we minimized the number that were taken across those areas in Georgetown and Portland. And again, hopefully the value of those birds that were taken, and again, this is an invasive species which is very, very common in urban areas, so it's not going to be of any kind of consequence for the conservation or biodiversity values in those towns. But hopefully by doing that, then our study can shine a light on both the consequences that we need to be aware of more broadly for other animals in those environments. And previous studies had actually shown adverse effects on wallabies and also koalas living in that same environment. And of course, that's something that we should be more worried about. And again, the potential impacts on human health. And again, what we would suggest is that our study is shining a light on a potential problem that could be affecting people in those environments, and that's maybe something that should be looked at in further examinations.
So is this where we need to step in and change the way we do things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to, all of these industrial processes that are driving these problems, they're important processes. Of course, we need to continue to mine and process metals, but we just need to do that carefully. There are ways of mitigating the sources of this contamination into the environment, and we need to be more mindful of the effects that contamination in the environment is having on both people and animals. I'm not suggesting for one moment that we would curtail those processes at all, but perhaps we just need to look at the way in which those processes are governed, and you know, some tighter controls on the emissions that are being taken that are coming from those processes, and the amount of remediation we do of environments if there's already historical contamination in those environments. So I think that's something that certainly we should be looking at.
Professor Simon Griffith, Professor of Avian Behavioural Ecology at Macquarie University, speaking with Thomas Skoutis there and ending that report.